Okay, that place is about to turn into a Manson family situation any day now. I am deeply uncomfortable with what I have seen.
New York is dead. The city is no place for people like us anymore.
Okay, Hermie, I know it feels that way, but no. Those hipsters are a very specific subculture, a vocal minority, if you will, like the Westboro Baptist Church, but they may all be related for all we know. This is what I propose. Raise as a destination for the anti-hipster.
You're talking about rebranding?
Oh, a heavy rebranding. Like when Kentucky Fried Chicken just became KFC, so people would forget that they were, you know, eating Kentucky food. Gentlemen, it is high time we start selling coffee to people with jobs.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Boys Watching Girls. We're just two boys watching HBO's Girls. We are your hosts. I am Joe Welke.
I am Vance.
And today we're talking about Season 5, Episode 9. Overall, this is Episode 51. It is titled Love Stories, directed by Alex Karpovsky, who is Ray in the show. And it is written by Max Brockman, Jason Kim, and Lena Dunham. The original air date is April 17th, 2016, to an audience of 582,000 people, 0.582 million. And yeah, this is an episode.
it is. I enjoyed this episode a fair amount, even though it's a little bit of a Debbie Downer at points. The perfect Ray episode, I would say. Like, you can see if Ray, the character Ray, made a movie or an episode of TV, this would be it.
Mm-hmm.
And
he did. He directed this.
Yeah. And for me, I feel good about this one just because of the way it ended. I thought it was, the last scene was amazing. And I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, this one I feel really good about this one, especially after the last episode where I was just pissed off. This one was like a nice palate cleanser to get me back into the world of Girls, mm-hmm. where I'm like, okay, this isn't all terribleness and awfulness, you know?
Yeah.
This isn't all people being complete assholes and thinking that nothing is going to happen.
But that's not how it starts. The way it starts is real aggressive.
Yeah, it is very aggressive. But this one, we can do our famous character breakdowns. Yeah. So we have three main stories. We have a Marnie story, we have a Shoshana story, and we have a Hannah story.
There's also,
and then in there is a mini Elijah story.
Yeah, how do you want to handle the Elijah story with the... Do you want to loop him in with the Marnie story?
I guess we can do that because he does have a scene with Marnie in this. Yeah.
Or we could just have that scene with Marnie in her story and Elijah gets his own, because really.
Yeah, we could do Elijah's. Yeah, let's do Elijah has his own story.
Yeah.
Should we start with him?
Yeah, let's do Elijah's. Yeah, let's just jump in with Elijah and go from there.
Okay, do we want to start with his scene with Marnie? Because his scene with Marnie doesn't have anything to do with
No, that's story. The Marnie story.
Yeah. Okay, so Elijah, to start off, kick off his story, at least in my estimation, is he's in a clothing store, mm-hmm. and he's trying to find some clothes because he's going to confront Dil Harcourt about the open relationship that they are in, that he didn't really know that he was in, and he wants the open relationship to be closed. Mm-hmm. So he's in a clothing store, and the woman in the clothing store just comes up to him and is kind of like, is there anything I can help you with? And he's like, yeah, I'm in an open relationship. I want it to be closed. So what are some clothes that would say that? And those two vibe real well. I think her name is Demelia or something.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, I got the perfect thing for this. And she shows him a sport coat. And he's like, oh, I like you. How come you're not working at a more high-end clothing store? And she's like, how come you're not shopping in one? And he's like, touche. Like, which I thought was great.
Yeah, they're like, let's pretty woman this bitch. And I was like, that's great.
Yeah.
I know like the theme is like love and all this stuff and like in the episode, but they had a lot of hookups that aren't hookups. You know what I mean? Like Elijah, I thought, might end up hooking up with this. Like they were vibing to a level that was beyond like just getting close. And there's like there's some other scenes where I'm like, oh, these hookups might happen and they don't, which is mm-hmm. great. Like they showed restraint on these like normal TV show two people together, they're gonna hook up. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. And I think that we're on the same page mm-hmm. about one particular hookup that could have happened and then didn't. And as soon as it didn't happen, I was like, thank God.
Yeah, there's like two of those for me coming up. But like,
So, yeah. And then Elijah's all pumped up about his new sport coat. He originally went in there in some gym gear. And on his way out of the store, he starts walking down the street to go confront Dill and just kind of trashes his gym gear, which I think is a complete waste, but he just throws his running shoes into the garbage. So once he throws his gym gear out, you know, he's walking with purpose to go confront Dill. He walks into Dill's studio. That's the next scene that we see him in. Dill's going over the stories that he is about to cover for the day. And Elijah's like, hey, we need to talk. And Dale's like, oh, yeah, but let's talk afterwards. And he's like, no, I want to talk right now. And Dale's like, oh, boy, this must be important.
Yeah.
So he pulls Dill away and he's like giving him this speech about, don't you want somebody that sees you for who you are and all the guys that you're fucking are just boy toys, basically, and they don't know you for who you really are. And they're not going to be honest with you about, you know, your bad jokes or that you don't look good with a shaved head. And you deserve someone special like that. And Dill's like, you know what? You're right. I do deserve someone special like that. And then Elijah's smiling. And he's like, thank you, Elijah. You're really opening my mind about this. This is great. And then Elijah's, and he's like, I do deserve somebody like that. And then it comes to the realization, Elijah, it kind of dawns on him. He's like, oh, he's talking about somebody else.
Yeah.
And it's not me.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, so it's not me. And then Elijah's like, or Dill's like, yeah, it's not, but I really respect you and think that you're an awesome person, but you're just not what I need in my life anymore. He says he's looking for someone more his age, someone taller. And Elijah's like, well, we're like the same height. Like, how much taller can a person be? And he's like, and someone who's less aimless, which I thought was the most powerful kind of, like, Elijah's got to wake up, you know?
Yeah, that's that was the kicker, you know. That's gonna, I don't know what that's gonna do. It's gonna have him work harder at whatever he does. I don't, like, even that jacket that he bought, I was like, how is he even working this? Like, how does he have money to throw away? He threw away his sneakers and running attire on his walk to the place. Like,
super wasteful.
And he's rocking the green bottoms. What is that something? Those shoes? I noticed they had green bottoms. I don't know. That fashion.
Those are just like those dress shoes that mm-hmm. have a running, like I have a couple of pairs of those. Mine don't have green bottoms, but mm-hmm. they're dress shoes that have a running shoe sole, basically, that are super popular. Yeah. Everybody's got them now.
Mm-hmm. I think he's looked better in some things that he wore. He was looking better at the party, but it's Elijah. He's going in.
Yeah.
And I liked it. This scene was great with him and Dill. Just because, I mean, Elijah, the actor, Andrew Rannells, was able to, like, you know, really stretch his acting in this show right here. Like, they were really emotional. Like, they went in for that close-up. Yeah, tears in both eyes.
You can see tears in both of their eyes.
Yeah. And it was, like, a great moment for Dill to be like, you know what, you're right. You are making a point. But even when he was saying this, I was like, I don't think Dill is going to be with Elijah. Like, I didn't, I was like, that's not his end game, because you live in the apartment with this girl and her boyfriend and your teacher. Like, it just wasn't, I just felt like they weren't on that level of, like, the two of them were going to be together.
And you know, you kind of feel for Elijah, because you know, he's pouring his heart out there. I think this was like a very mature conversation.
Yeah.
And I think they both handled it maturely. And this is like a very realistic, mature, like, hey, I really appreciate it. You're right. I have been thinking about that, but you're just not the guy for me.
Yeah. And I was,
and then
you got, what did you say?
Oh, it was like, there was a little moment of pettiness with Elijah where he's like, well, what does the guy look like? You know, who is he?
Yeah.
And Dale was like, dude, come on. Yeah. Like, I'm trying to let you down easy. And Elijah's kind of like, oh, okay.
And I was just thinking about, like, the sound guy who just, the sound person that's just hearing all of this. Because he's mic'd up and about to go.
Yeah, he's mic'd.
And he's talking
he's
about
got
all
a laugh
these,
on.
Yeah, he's talking about all these guys he's been hooking up with. I'm sure they already know, but it's like really fun. I was just thinking about that. Because they always have these like private conversations, but they're just mic'd up.
Yeah. So that is, I thought that was a really good scene. I thought that was, I mean, that basically wraps up Elijah's story in this episode. But I thought it was really great, and it showcased a more mature relationship slash breakup situation.
Yeah.
Which I was like, yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they handled that really as well as they could.
Yeah, it was it was tactful. It was mature. It was great. Yeah. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
And Dil Harcourt, dude, that actor is so good.
Yeah. Oh, we lost our bet. That's what I wanted to bring up. Yeah, he's been in definitely over 3.5 episodes.
He hit the over. He hit the over for sure. So that's about that for Elijah. That's his little arc of the story this time around. I thought it was a good story. And should we move into Shoshana?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right, so Shoshana's back. She shows up at Ray's coffee house to surprise him, and he's like, Shosh, I'm so happy to see you. You look like a real adult woman now. And she's, which, why? She has, like, pink hair.
He is, like, really excited to see her. Like,
yeah.
Like, genuinely.
Well, I think that they're, like, just a really good. I mean, they say it later on in the scene, but they're a great team together.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, she shows up and she's basically like, what's going on? This place looks dead. Is it closed? What's happening? He's like, nah, I mean, Helvetica across the street is what's happening. And it's stealing all of my fucking business. And I don't know what to do. And they're all gender neutral hipster motherfuckers. And I hate them. And she's like, you can't just take this laying down, Ray. You have to fight them. You have to fight this. We need to crush them. And so it's a basic, you know, Ray Shoshana team up again.
Yeah. I mean, he mentions that he's going to close up shop because he has to do a council thing or whatever.
Which I'm surprised. I was very surprised to hear.
Just, you know, just toss it in there. Just throw it out there.
Yeah. He's still a city councilman, yeah. I guess.
I thought we were going to end up seeing that. And I'm happy we didn't because I don't really care about any of that. Especially if they're going to go this long in the season without it, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, it's part of his world. Just mention it. Keep moving. Yeah.
Part of his world.
But I did say that coffee place was going down. Like, that coffee truck was a last ditch.
Oh, yeah.
Effort.
Yeah, Hermie is basically suicidal about it or something. What did he say? He's like taking a bunch of antidepressants because of it and whatever.
Or that he was going to turn it into a billiards store. Not a hall, but a place where they sell billiards tables.
Yeah. And Shoshana is like, I'm not going to allow this to happen. I'm a marketing person. I fucking majored in it. This is what I do. We're going to beat these people. And Ray's like, all right, let's fucking do it.
Yeah.
And it made me happy to see them teaming up again.
Yeah. I mean, that was always the thing. They were always supposed to go into business together.
And he also lets it be known that the reason why he crashed his coffee truck is because Hannah tried to blow him while going 50 miles an hour. And Shoshana's like, you know, after they decide to team up, she has a moment of like, wait, did you say that Hannah sucked your... You know what? I don't want to know about it.
It's so, like, it's at a level where Shoshana's like, you know what? It's a Hannah thing. I'm not even... It doesn't matter. Like, it's not... Anyone else, you'd be shocked and you want to be like, what happened with Hannah? You're like, never mind.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, this is exactly... Yeah, Hannah definitely would have tried to suck your dick.
And there's another character in this episode that's just like, never mind, Hannah.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Nothing matters, it seems.
So the next scene that I fucking absolutely loved.
Yes.
Is Shoshana in her super sleuth trench coat going to Helvetica to take notes on why they're so successful. She has a literal notebook that says field notes.
Yeah.
She has like a fedora on and a trench coat, like a 1940s detective.
Detective Shosh, man. Detective Shosh is on the case.
I loved the look. And then I saw that the notebook said field notes. And I was like, this is so hilarious.
Yeah. I mean, that's like a real book. Like the field notes is like what you take when you go out. And I think some of them are waterproof on the outside or whatever, just for like camping and bird watching and all that kind of stuff. And it's such a Ray type brain to have. The way it's filmed with like the cuts to people and the cutting back to her reacting and writing something down.
Yeah. So you see cuts of people, you know, laughing and enjoying coffee or playing board games and
painting and drawing. Someone pouring their own soy milk. They had their own soy milk container. Someone's painting, drawing her like nude.
Yeah, that was so weird. Yeah. It was a drawing of her with the trench coat, but she's like flashing.
Yeah, it's like fully from the like trench coat. Figure drawing. What else was there? There was another one I can't remember that was pretty funny. It was between the soy milk and the I forget what it was. It was like a group of people doing something.
I'm pretty sure that I could be wrong, but I thought that it was somebody like playing a board game or something.
Yeah, was they playing chess or something? Was that happening? It was maybe. I mean,
it seems something. It was some kind of hipster bullshit.
Chess is super popular now, man.
Yeah, no, Queen's Gambit made it fucking. Did you watch that show?
I did watch Queen's Gambit. And I know how to play chess, and I play chess. Not often, but I did not love Queen's Gambit.
Me neither. I watched two episodes of it, and I was like, I just can't.
I watched the whole thing. I love the actress. It was just some stuff. Yeah. It was just some stuff in it that it didn't fully do it for me. It's fine.
Yeah. People. So, after a while of Shoshana being in the coffee shop taking field notes, one of the baristas is like, hey, can we help you? And she's like, oh, I mean, no, maybe. I'm doing a found word poem, and I'm just here to do my poetry. And the one barista is like having none of it. And the other guy, the guy that's there is like, oh, right on. All right. She's like, you guys want to give me some words? And the one barista is like giving all these like tyranny, patriarchy, and like all these hard words.
Lena Dunham's sister. Yeah.
And then the guy barista was like greenery. Blah. And then the last word that they give is cat. And he's like, wow, that's very powerful. I don't think I could top that.
Yeah. It's just like, I think that's enough. I don't have the rhyming pattern, the rhyme scheme.
And then she says goodbye, which they're saying mahalo.
Yeah, which I thought was perfect. Like,
yeah,
just to do that Hawaiian goodbye.
Dude, hipsters would fucking eat that shit up.
Yeah. I will argue that I still like, and we'll get to this, but I think Ray's coffee shop would not be this empty.
Absolutely not. People would see how crowded Helvetica is and be like, well, there's a place literally right across the street.
Yeah.
Unless Ray's is serving literal like diarrhea.
Yeah.
Like, no way it would be that empty. Yeah. In Brooklyn, New York?
Yeah.
No.
We're not going to rehash coffee talk, but yeah, people would go there.
So after she's done taking, and I thought that scene was great. It showcased like a lot of the stereotypes of hipstery woke culture in New York.
For me, it's just seeing her dress like that and actually trying.
Yeah.
Like she's not even sitting down at a table watching people and like blending in. Like if she just went in there like herself, sat at a table, no one would even know. Like she looked like a narc coming in there to spy on.
Yeah.
And I thought that's what the baristas were going to call her out on.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah.
And I think that Lena Dunham's sister was wise to it.
It seemed like it, but then once they started naming things, it seemed like she was playing along too. Like she was the one that said cat at the end, so like she was into it. But yeah, I thought she was going to be like, hey, I know what you're up to.
I thought the trench coat and hat thing was goofy as fuck too, because it seems like it happened like 5 minutes later. And like, where the fuck did she get that outfit from?
I don't know if it was supposed to be a different day or if she just went straight across the street.
It's just like, held on, Ray. I have to go get my spy gear.
If she had a magnifying glass, that would have been... That would have just tipped it over the top.
That would have been fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
So she goes back to Ray's to let, you know, and Hermes there, Colin Quinn's character. And she's like, I need to let you guys know what I saw over there was atrocious. And they're like, yeah, I told you, it's like hipster heaven. And her plan is like, okay, well, we need to hit this in a unique way. because every coffee shop now is like the hipster place to be. We need to be the anti-hipster coffee place. And Hermie's like, you mean like a whole rebrand? She's like, yeah, absolutely a whole rebrand. We need to be like the corporate, you get your coffee here because you have a job and you're not a fucking hipster.
Yeah, we need to sell coffee to people with jobs, is what yeah. she said. Which isn't that Starbucks' whole thing.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, where? I'm curious to see how this rebrand would look.
Yeah, I'm like, your place looks like a place that you go. It doesn't look super hipster, chic, trendy, modern. Like, yeah. It's not white in the inside. It's still wood and
yeah,
dark. I don't know what they're going to do.
All right, let's see. This is going to be a bet for the boys watching girls bettors, okay?
Those gamblers, those degenerates.
What do you think it's going to look like on the inside when they do the rebuild, retool, rebrand?
I feel like
I'm thinking white tile. Very okay. bright white and black, kind of like fuck. Yeah, have you ever been to the Smith in New York? It's a restaurant.
The name sounds familiar.
It's a very popular brunch place. And mm-hmm. I used to work there for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all the waiters have to wear like shirts and ties and shit like that. And mm-hmm. it's a very uppity, yuppie kind of place. And it had white tile with like every once in a while there was a black tile. And then the ground was like checkerboard. That's what I'm picturing this upscale coffee place to look like.
Yeah, I mean... How much different is that from what Helvetica looks like inside, you know?
I think that Helvetica looks more like red-ish. Like, Ray's is very wooden mm-hmm. and red, very warm, welcoming. Like, it needs to look more cold and, like, business is done here.
Because I'm thinking, like, Starbucks are, like, more granite-y, you know, colored, but, like, they're still dark inside, you know? Like, I don't know.
Maybe marble.
I don't think they have the money after losing 50 grand on that truck.
That's very true. That's very true.
I think you just, I don't know. You would think putting a sign out with some specials and saying, hey, we have tables and you can sit here all day or something. Or just getting faster Wi-Fi. Because coffee talk is happening now. like Blue Bottle, they don't have Wi-Fi at their coffee shops.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I've only been to one Blue Bottle. I mean, it was fucking dope.
Yeah, I like Blue Bottle, but it's like they don't have, it's not a go in there and sit there. Like, you can sit there and do stuff, but it's not like, hey, we have Wi-Fi and you can sit here and just camp out at a table and write your dissertation, you know?
Yeah, nobody's doing their screenplays at Blue Bottle.
Yeah. I mean, you could. I mean, that would keep you off the internet.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Yeah.
See, Ray's right now, I feel, is kind of like Alcove.
All right, where I'm going to end like... coffee talk. We just dropped Alcove. We're not even paid by them. We can't mention them on every podcast.
Our top spot for listeners is not Los Angeles. Yeah. All these people have no idea what we're talking about.
All right.
Also, shout out Illinois. Illinois is fucking coming through right now. They're listening to us a lot. So if you're in Illinois and you're listening to the Boys Watching Girls, shout out to you. Thanks for your listenership. Okay, so anyway, that's basically where Shoshana's story ends.
Yeah.
There's going to be a rebrand for Ray's.
Yeah.
And I'm excited to see what it looks like. I'm picturing white tile.
I just picture it being crowded and him talking to Shoshana being like, this is amazing. And it looks exactly the same.
All right.
Because I don't think they're bringing a new location.
Okay, so now Marnie?
Yeah.
All right, so Marnie starts off with a bang, having a goddamn wet dream.
That she calls a love dream.
Yeah. So
I have to say, I was really hoping for my prediction that it was about Adam. I was thinking so too. If she says she was dreaming about Adam, it counts.
Yeah, no, and
It was so close.
I was thinking that was going to be about Charlie.
It could have. It would have made sense. I mean.
Yeah, but it appears that we were both wrong because. So she meets up with Elijah after her sex dream. love dream. And she meets up with Elijah to talk to him about it. And her love dream was about Ray, where, and she even mentions, like, I came during this dream. Have you ever had a wet dream, Vance?
Yeah.
I never have. And I feel like I'm missing out on a big part of life because of that.
I don't know how to help you.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like I don't know a lot of people that haven't had wet dreams.
It doesn't seem like something I've gone around and talked to a bunch of people about, but okay. Mm.
But here we are, boys watching girls.
I like that you're watching a scene and you're just jealous of Marty.
Yeah. I mean, I just am like, how do you fucking orgasm while you're asleep? Like, I don't get it. And yeah, it's a part of life that I wish I have experienced, but I haven't.
Well, Elijah says, Marty, you know you can't come.
Yeah, I didn't understand that. I was like, what the fuck is
that? He's saying like she can't orgasm. He's like, it's claiming that she's one of those women that doesn't orgasm. That's the joke there.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And if that was one of Marnie's traits, I could see that as being true.
Yeah, I mean, she seems like the, like if you were going to stereotype, like make someone like, because it's not true, like they all can, but like that trope of that, she would be the one. If you had to pick one of the girls, she would be the one.
I know women that could only come, but they had to be with very specific circumstances. Like I dated a girl in college who could only come when she was using a shower head. That's the only way that she could ever do it. And I knew a girl, and this is the one where I was like, I don't really get this. This girl, she had to wear blue jeans and basically hump your leg like a dog. That was the only way she could get off. And I was like, okay, all right, well. Everybody's got something, you know?
Yeah, takes all kinds. It's interesting that it's the dog thing and the blue jeans, like the double combination. Yeah. Like if she had sweats on, it wouldn't work.
No, it was like the friction of the blue jeans. And she didn't describe it like, I need to hump your leg like a dog. It was just she needed to rub on your leg while wearing blue jeans.
What, specifically your leg? Or like could you just rub on anything?
I guess it could be anything.
Okay, so then it's not specifically like a dog, but it must have been like, okay, yeah.
I mean, when it was happening, I was like, wow, I feel like a fire hydrant or like you're a dog and I'm a person, you know?
Okay.
Yeah. But it was very interesting.
It seems like
lovely
it
lady.
Seems like it
very
seems
lovely
like
lady.
It seems like wet dreams make a lot more sense than that when you think about it.
Hey, I think they're a lot more common.
Yeah.
But yeah. So she's talking to Elijah about it and Elijah's just negging her. Mm-hmm. And the whole time, because she's like, it wasn't even like we had sex. It was I was brushing Ray's hair and he had these long flowing locks like Khaleesi from Game of Thrones. Nice cross promotion, HBO. And she's like, and I was just brushing his hair and it was so amazing. And Elijah's like, what the fuck are you talking about? He's just like, this is the most sad thing I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, yeah. She does say something like, oh, it was like the most, like, I think that's twice in this episode that someone said something to someone and they're like, that's the saddest thing I've ever heard. But like, he's like, is it like you were brushing his hair like he was a little kid? Like your kid or
something?
Yeah,
it was like it's your daughter.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, actually, kind of like that. And I was like, this is getting real weird.
But Elijah had the great joke. It was like, she was like, I was brushing his hair. And she's like, that's a lost cause. Like, I'm talking about Ray's hair.
Yeah.
Then he makes fun of her sandals or something. Like, he is just catty.
Yeah, well, she says something like, I don't know what's wrong with me. And he's like, well, let's start with those sandals.
Yeah. Like they crammed a lot of Elijah into that scene.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and that's the only thing that makes her talking about, like, no one cares about people's dreams. So, like, it's the only way we could tolerate her talking about her, like, Ray sex love dream that makes no sense is having Elijah chime in snarkily.
It always reminds me of there's an episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia where Sweet D's trying to tell Dennis about her dream.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I don't care about your dream. Dreams are like photo albums. If I'm not in any of them, if I'm not in any of the pictures and no one's having sex, I just don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
It's so good. Such a great line.
Yeah.
So after that scene, Marnie meets up with Desi because she seems to like want to put the past behind them and get on with like a good, healthy working relationship where he's not ignoring her outside of rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, yeah, this is a good thing. It was nice to meet up with you without Tandis being there. And they're just kind of laying out the rules, the new rules of their relationship and being like, hey, this is what we should be doing. And then Tandis shows up and she's like, yep, you said it was going to be 8 minutes. Now, anything after 8 minutes, you're reimmersing yourself into the relationship. So I'm taking you away. And it's just so weird. Tandis is so weird, dude.
Yeah. And there's that part where she's like, oh, I got you this tea. And he's like, oh, great. And she's like, how does it make you feel? And he's like,
yeah.
And he says, grateful, excited, thirsty.
Like, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like he's dating like a child psychiatrist, and she's like really just working through his like. It's like dating a therapist or something. Like he has everything he has to do has to like sound it out, tell your feelings.
Yeah,
and it's just like whatever.
It's so bizarre.
And I'm like, you know, it's whatever, so whatever for Desi. Like he's a mess.
I feel like he needs that though. Like he's such a child. He needs someone like that supervising him, basically.
It's such a weird relationship, you know?
Yeah.
Like, just like if you had to hang out with the two of them, like if they were not around Marnie and you were just like with some friends and that couple was there of Tandis and Desi, you'd just be like, what is this? What is this?
Yeah. So she takes him away and Marnie is basically like, well, okay, well, what the fuck was that? Whatever, who cares? And then the next time we see Marnie, she knocks on Ray's door. And Ray answers and he's like, hey, what's up? She's like, I'm here and I need to confess a strong feeling that I'm having about you. And he's like, okay. And she's like, I really want to brush your hair. And I thought that was going to be it. And I was like, this is so stupid. And Ray's like, what?
I really thought they were going to cut to her brushing his hair and do like a ghost thing with the vase making kind of. Like, I thought like there'd be some music and it'd just be all like overly sensual, like hair brushing.
Yeah. Just basically a sex scene, but with her hands running through his hair and that's it.
Yeah. And her just leaning back and him like rolling his head back. You know, he has to close his eyes whenever anytime he's getting pleasure. So like.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just like her shampooing his hair or something.
She starts blow drying.
And then she's like, and then she's like, I found my purpose. I want to be a hairdresser now or whatever the fuck.
Sometimes I just want her to go super weird, but probably because we're doing a podcast about it.
Yeah. But he's like, so what are you talking about? And she's like, I just want to rub my fingers through your hair. I want to brush your hair. I had this dream. And then she starts to run her fingers through his hair. And then she starts kissing him. And then she's like, I don't know what the fuck is happening, but I feel like I had a love dream about you. And he was like, what? A love dream about me? And she's like, yeah, I know it shouldn't. I feel like you shouldn't be the one that I'm having a dream about, but you are. And he's like, I think that I should be the one if you're having a dream about me. And then she says that she loves him and then they smooch.
Yeah. I mean,
she's in denial about it.
She says she loves him and which I was like, wow, that was like crazy. Like he was like, oh, a love dream. And he's like, what's the love dream? And she's like, I love you. And it was like, oh, wow. And then she's like, but it can't be you. Because she's already said, she said it to him in his face before that like, oh, I'm not going to end up with you. Like, I'm that girl in high school you couldn't get. Like, she puts herself at such a higher level than Ray.
Mm-hmm.
And like, and you look at Charlie and where Charlie is right now is like, that's not a good place. You look at Desi and I'm not like, wow, Desi or Ray. Like, it's, I'm like, yeah, you could do, Ray's fine. Like, what are you talking about? Like. You haven't been hitting it out of the park.
It's like, look, you can do better, but you've been doing worse too.
You've been doing a lot worse. Like, I'm sorry, you love Ray. It's fine. Yeah. It's weird that this happens very quickly after her saying she wants to be alone. Like, I don't know why she even said that. Like, it seems like that scene happened, but there was no... It didn't actually affect anything. Ray didn't do something drastic because he found out she didn't love him. And he didn't... Like, nothing happened from that. It was like, here's a scene. She says, I'm going to be by myself. And he's like, okay. Yeah. Like, it didn't... And it was weird how he answered the door. He was like, oh, you're at my door. Like, yeah, dude. Of course she was going to show up at some point.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like if somebody confessed their love for me in this manner, I'd be so insulted.
Right, like, Ray is, like, just putting up with it. Like, I don't know, like, I guess it goes to that opening scene that we haven't talked about yet with Fran. And it's just, like, he loves her, so, sure. Yeah. Like, I guess he'll put up with her constantly saying that she's better than him and...
Yeah, she's like, I love you, but I just never thought that I'd be in love with somebody like you. You're such a fucking loser.
Yeah, just like, all right.
Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, Marty. Can you put that in the wedding vows?
Yeah. But key moment, I don't think that Ray said that he loved her back. Did he?
He did not. And at that point, I also think he shouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, she just stormed in. She's still... kind of not divorced yet, and you've seen Marnie do this before.
yeah Who knows what's going to happen next episode, you know? She could be spiraling out of control again. But good for our boy Ray. He gets to be with the lady that he wants to be with so far, seemingly. Who knows what's going to happen? And that wraps up Marnie's story. So now we get to Hannah, and the episode opens up with Hannah's story, and it's just Fran in her apartment being like, what the fuck? How could you break up with me? What the fuck is up with this? Like, I'm a good boyfriend. How could you break up with me? I don't freak out like this. What the fuck's happening?
Yeah, and it's one of those scenes where someone's super frustrated and yelling and they look like an idiot, and the other person just calmly walking around and being like, okay. So it makes Fran look like the whole season has been to make Fran look like the worst person ever. And I feel like she could have broken up with Fran just because of like Fran being boring and just not who she loves and whatever. But like, I don't think they have to make Fran this like aggro maniac that he didn't seem like he was ever until the breakup stuff needed to happen. And
yeah,
he is insane in the last couple scenes. Like, and I'm happy they called out, like, because she's trying to break up with him, he's pushing back and being like, you might have lost the best thing ever because I'm a good boyfriend. And she's like, I might have, and the relationship isn't working, and you don't even really like me. Like, yeah, which I was like, dude, was great. She's like, why are you fighting so hard? And it's the question you've been asking. Why are you fighting so hard to keep this relationship? And
she's tried to break up with him for 3 episodes in a row, it seems like. And for 3 episodes in a row, you and I have been like, yeah, just leave, Fran.
Like, yeah, like, Fran, what are you doing? Like, bounce, man. And then he's like, but yeah, I don't like you, but I love you. And it's like, man, and that gets to like a scary point. Because I'm like, so he might not give up because he loves you, which is his excuse to be like super angry. Like, he became Adam 2.0 from like the earlier seasons, where Adam says something like, oh, I don't have to be nice to you because I love you. Like, that was one of his lines. I'm like, now Fran has become that.
Yeah, and he's telling Hannah, like, you've said that you've never even been in a stable relationship, so you don't even know what it would be like. Like, this is what a stable relationship is. And I think it speaks to one of those things where Fran is kind of having a Marnie, like, how could you break up with me? Like, I'm so much better than you. Mm-hmm. Like, this doesn't make sense. And having to admit that failure of, like, I'm being broken up with by someone like you, but I'm better than you. Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And I could see how someone would be like insulted, like, you're breaking up with me? You're the fucking loser. And kind of fighting.
Yeah, fighting I mean, I definitely buy that. But it's weird that he... It's weird that he's not... like, that he actually seems like he wants to stay in the relationship, too. Like, not like...
Yeah, dude.
Not like, I want to be the one that breaks up with you. You don't break up with me. Like, how Marnie stormed out when Ray said he wanted to break up with Marnie. He was like, this isn't working. And she's like, no, you can't break up with me. I break up with you. He seems like he does not want to end this relationship at any... Like, not down the line, not ever. Like, he's like, I will go down with this ship.
Well, it's this is one of those things where if Hannah were to acquiesce and be like, okay, we can keep dating, I would say tops a month later, he'd be like, oh, yeah, why was I wanting to be in this? I'm breaking up with you. Like, you're a horrible person. I just don't understand why he's there anymore. Like, after the road trip thing, I was like, okay, that's it for Fran. And then we open up with Fran freaking out, like, how can you break up with me? I was like, bro, it's over.
Yeah, dude, like, I mean, what? And I don't know how much time has passed from the road trip thing, like, if it's a week, if it's a couple days or whatever. But after the principal thing, after exposing herself to the principal, and then after the road trip where she ran away from you and ditched you and ruined the whole summer plans, what are you doing? Like,
yeah,
get out of there.
I think it's just one of those things where it's like he fancies himself a winner, and him being broken up with is like an admission of failure, and he's not a failure. So it's one of those ego things.
But I'd argue that he doesn't fancy himself a winner just based off of him teaching at the school but not having gone to college and like that vibe. Maybe he just doesn't want to go back to his crazy roommate. Like, maybe that's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's true. And now he's homeless.
Yeah. I mean, because otherwise, I just don't get...
Yeah, I did enjoy Hannah's demeanor during this whole thing of just being calm and being like, Fran, you know what? You're right. Maybe you are the best thing, but I can't see that right now, and I don't want to be with you right now. And there's nothing you can do or say about that. He's just like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And it's just like, is this going to be the last scene we see of Fran, and it's just him... Just yell like the Fran's ending has just been him yelling fuck a lot.
Yeah, that's true.
Like every scene we see him in, it's just like fuck, Hannah, fuck, fuck, fuck. And like,
I mean, the last time we saw him, he was talking about how his brother wrote a letter about how rude she is, and he's still fighting for it. Like, give it up.
Yeah,
I've seen the nudes on your phone, Fran. You can do better.
You could do better just by being with anyone else because you don't like her.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. Whatever. It's frustrating. It's so frustrating to see that.
So that's all we see of Fran for this episode. And then next scene is Hannah packing up her shit at the school. I guess, is this the start of summer break? I thought that summer was...
No, it's summer break because they were going... camping, they were leaving for the summer, so it's still June at least.
See, that's what I thought. Like, but why didn't she pack up her stuff before that then?
Well, because she was going to come back to school in the fall, so why would she take stuff?
Oh yeah, I guess that's true. So she's packing up her desk, and the principal shows up, and he's like, oh, good thing school's not in session, because that outfit wouldn't be appropriate, because she's got like a crop top on her.
Yeah,
belly's exposed.
And this was giving me some Creepster vibes right there.
Same.
And
exactly.
Yeah.
This scene for me was very tense.
Yes, it was very tense, but it was supposed to be very heartwarming. But yeah. I was on the edge.
Yeah.
I was on edge.
I was waiting for something fucked up to happen.
I was like, you do
not.
This
show.
Yeah, you don't make that comment to someone who just exposed themselves to you to avoid getting fired.
Yes.
Like, it was like he was coming to collect. That's what I felt. And I was really, like, that's what it seemed like. It was like, oh, they're in the school. In the summertime, no students.
Yeah.
He's in her off. Like,
push all the stuff on the desk off the side and get to it on top of the desk.
This was the first of the hookups where I was like, I'm happy. Because it had that moment where he's like getting close. I thought he was going to lean in and try to kiss her. And it was going to be super weird.
Same. So, what's happening is Hannah's basically telling him like, hey, I'm trying to listen to signs from the universe, and the universe is telling me that I shouldn't be teaching at this place anymore. And he's like, well, I appreciate that. And I have to say, it's been great having you here. I always appreciate your joie de vivre, whatever. And he always appreciates her attitude, and she inspired the students and opened his mind to new ways of teaching and how to connect with kids or whatever. And she's like, thank you, I really appreciate that. And I'm sorry for showing you my pussy. And he's like, water under the bridge. Don't even worry about it.
When that happened, I was like, wait, what? Like, that's just a little thing that happens sometimes. Is that what all the teachers are doing? Is that how every teacher gets out of trouble? What is...
And dude, and it, like, he is creeping closer and closer to her, and it just felt menacing to me. I was worried about what was going to happen, man.
Well, just to open with the comment on her, like, her wardrobe and how she's, like, half nude. Like, she's not fully... Like, she's wearing short shorts and cropped up. Like, that seems something, like, you shouldn't say to this person who you know might just flash you, like, immediately. Yeah. Like, unless you kind wanted that to happen. Kind of a loose cannon. Yeah. Like, I would be like, hey, so, I'm going to go into this room with another person so that I'm not trapped in here with her. But...
Yeah. So, yeah, after she apologizes. He seems
cool about it. He seems cool about it. I don't get it. I don't see why he's so cool about it.
Dude, he loves her. He loves her teaching style. Skipping school to get piercings with kids, calling them bitches loudly in the hallway.
Like, he's called her to the office so many times.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like it's all been like, oh, great job.
Having an argument fight with Fran in front of a student about a grade thing that they had.
And none of the other teachers like her, not even the one she's dating.
Yep. I think it's definitely good for Hannah to not be at this place anymore, for sure.
Yeah.
But basically, after she apologizes for flashing him, she's like, all right, well, I think that you're also a lot funkier than you give yourself credit for, and like gives him a attaboy slugger, and then walks out. And then the principal kind of looks around her classroom, and he's like, well, that was definitely an experience. I was like, what the fuck is this?
No, I was like, it was like the end of like a like TGA, like a Friday night like sitcom in the 90s where it's like, times we had. The time, like, you never spent any time in that classroom. You are a principal. Like, you have no, she was there for a year. It's not like this longing memory of like she should do that. Yeah. She should be in the room, look at the classroom, be like, I did. I wanted to be a teacher and I did teach for a year. Like, that's her moment, not his moment. Like, maybe that actor
knows what's up with it.
Maybe that actor's like, yeah, I guess I'm done with girls. Like, I don't know.
After they called a wrap for him, they just like kept the camera lingering for a little more to see him like, all right, well, this is my first big acting job. I did it.
Yeah. Like, I felt the same way. I was just like, what is that? What was that? Like, it wasn't even like a sigh of relief that she's gone and like things can get back to normal. Like, it was wistful.
If it was a sitcom in the 90s, you'd see a montage of all the memories he had with Hannah.
Come to my office, the legs spreading, just like, oh, yeah. telling him about her her gay father sexual experiences. Like, everything that he went through was not like, oh, what a year.
I can't tell one positive interaction he would have had with her.
No.
But whatever, you know, he's going to be sad to see her go, I guess. Whatever. So anyway, after that, Hannah's walking down the street and she runs into her old rival, Tally, Jenny Slate.
Yeah.
Who was it, first season? We're at her book release party.
First or second? I can't remember exactly. Yeah.
It's basically Hannah's rival from college and who is more successful than Hannah on paper. And Hannah's kind of jealous of her life and she thinks she's so tacky and she hates her or whatever. And they're kind of petty towards each other. But they run into each other on the street and Tally's basically like, oh, my God, Hannah, like, what's going on? And Hannah's like, hey, Tally, good to see you, I guess. And Tally says that she's in the middle of writing a book and she just got back from a workshop and the book that she's writing is about an experience that both she and Hannah had. And Hannah's kind of like, well, that's kind of my story to tell. And Tally's like, aha, yeah, I guess it is.
She's like, ah, you remember it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, go fuck yourself. I'm writing this book.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, how are you? What's up with you? And Hannah's kind of like, I'm kind of lost in life. I just quit my job as a teacher. And yeah. And Tao's like, right on, right on. You want to hang out?
Yeah.
And I was like, sure. Why the fuck not?
Yeah.
What else am I doing?
She's like, I'm free until I have to go home for Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Well, I love that Tally's like, I'm free until 3 a.m.
Yeah. What is happening at 3 a.m.?
Yeah. And then Hannah one-ups her. Yeah. And she's like, I'm free until Thanksgiving. Yeah. So let's just fucking hang out. Sure.
Yeah.
And then they go to Criff Dogs, which is a famous hot dog spot in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever been there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't think I ever made it there. Is that the place that has a... Well, there's one in the Lower East Side that has a secret bar attached to it, right?
Yeah, I think that one has the one that goes to the speakeasy.
Yeah, there's like a phone booth that if you press a certain combination of numbers, it opens up to a speakeasy that's secret. And I love that shit.
Yeah.
So if you're in New York and the world is open back up and Criff Dog still exists, recommend doing that.
Oh, there was this bar in Brooklyn in Williamsburg that had... Oh, I'm drawing a blank on the name, but it had an entrance like that where it looks like just like the flat face place, and you open a door and you go down this long hallway and there's another door to open, and you didn't need a code or like anything to get in, but it was like if you didn't know it was there, you just wouldn't know. And then you go in and it has like this huge bar and it has like this upper outdoor deck, and it was like super cool. That's I forget the name.
Yeah. I love shit like that. Yeah. I went to a place like that out here in LA. I think it was a place called The Grace, and where if you like just go out back and you find like this secret kind of pathway, you can go upstairs, and the upstairs is like a punk rock bar. Yeah. And I was like, whoa, this is dope. I went to a burlesque show there.
What is that place in Hollywood? Something Davies or something that you kind of walk through like a fridge to get to it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I heard about only been that, there once, I haven't been there. Yeah.
I forget the name. I forget the exact name. Davy. I feel like it's Davy something.
I miss the world. If you're listening to this in fucking whatever 2025, we're in coronavirus times and the world is shut down. So yeah. A little nostalgia trip for you. But anyway.
Yeah.
So they're eating at Criff Dogs, and Hannah's basically unloading on Tally about how shitty her life is. Like, oh, I just, I miss Adam and I miss Jessa, and I was dating this guy who on the outside seemed cool, but he was kind of a dick and he was just too square for me, and I can't date a square. And Tally's just like eating it up, being like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, girl. Preach.
Queen. Well, she talks about leaving Iowa, and then she like Tally relates it to her leaving some writing retreat.
Mm-hmm.
And Tally's not being a terrible, like she's being fine. Like she's completely fine in all this.
Tally can relate to her struggles, it seems like, because when she brings up the Iowa workshop, she's like, didn't you feel so oppressed there?
Mm-hmm.
And Hannah was like, I just didn't want to write anymore. I stopped writing.
Yeah.
I quit.
She's like,
and Tally's like, damn.
Yeah. Like, that's crazy. And then they talk about, end up talking about Mimi Rose at one point.
Yeah, they commiserate about Mimi Rose because...
Yeah,
Tally hates her for blowing up her spot at TED Talks for women or something.
Oh, yeah, because she's like, oh, I got back from Iowa and Adam was with this Mimi Rose person. And she's like, oh, Howard? Mimi Rose Howard? And they're like, yeah, I know her. They talk about that. And then she complains that she was only with Fran, probably to get over Adam. And then she's like, oh, why don't you go back to Adam if he's the one you love? And she's like, I can't, because do you remember Jessa? And she's like, yeah, she was making meth.
Yeah. And she was making meth.
And Hannah's like, well, she was making the meth to sell, but she was smoking crack. Like,
yeah. Then and Tally's like, oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
Which is a great setup. And then I loved the line that Hannah had where she was like, talking about Adam and Jessa being together. And she's like, I'm not sure which one to warn about the other.
Yes. That was a great line.
Which I was like, that's so perfect. Because what do you tell them?
Like, yeah.
How do you warn? You're like, Jessa, you don't really want to be Adam. And Adam, you don't really want to be with Jessa. Like,
yeah.
You just let him go. But no, it was great.
So after Hannah kind of confesses about not writing anymore and basically being aimless in life, Tally stands up and she's just like, this is the saddest fucking thing I've heard in a long time. And she just hugs her and she's like, I'm so sorry.
Well, she hugged her more about the relationship stuff.
Yeah.
It was more of the relationship stuff that led to the hug, because she was like, I can't. Oh, no, it was about her not being able to. Like, she's like, my normal reaction would be to like destroy stuff and make a scene and do all this, but I can't do that because that's what they're expecting. So I can't be me in this situation with Adam and Jessa. And then that's when Tally gets up and hugs her.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a pretty sad thing. That was a pretty sad scene. I was like, God damn, that's fucking brutal. And very self-aware.
And at least this episode doesn't have, like, they've tried to do this like two episodes in a row. Like, Hannah didn't do anything crazy egregious in the beginning. So then when she's complaining about something that's really valid and you can kind of relate to an emotional level, you can just let that sink in. Mm-hmm. I'm not thinking about this horrible thing she did 10 minutes or before that in the episode, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that lands. You feel it. You understand it. Like, and I felt like her reaction to the Jessa, Adam relationship has always been done well. It just never, it never compared with what she was doing outside of that. Like, she'd do something completely unrelated that would make me not care about that.
Yeah. She also even mentions in this scene that she misses both of them, but she just can't have them in her life right now because she would just, you know, break down, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was like, that's a very self-aware moment, and that's, some people are like that, you know?
Well, I mean, she lost, like, Adam never really crossed over to just being her friend, but she lost Adam and she lost Jessa. So she lost two people with that, you know? That's the thing.
And Jessa's her best friend, which I was surprised to find out about last
episode. And the thing is, best friends in this case, it's more than one usually for them.
Yeah.
Like, I like the best friend as a one person deal, but
same.
I feel like their situation, all four of them are best friends. They might even throw Shoshana in it, even though they haven't even seen her yet. Apparently. I don't think anyone's seen her yet.
Yeah, I think that Ray is the only person that's seen her.
He seems surprised.
And Scott.
Yeah.
Well, whatever. So after this, they leave Criff Dogs. And Hannah's like, you know, I could have eaten more, but I just felt awkward about you not eating more. And for somehow, Tally convinces her to steal a guy's bike.
Yeah, well, a guy goes in and he just puts his bike up to the side. And she's like, he didn't even lock his bike up. And like, she feels like offended by that, you know?
And yeah, I didn't know that was a thing. That's not like it's not like littering or, you know, leaving a dog outside or not cleaning up with dog shit. I didn't think that was seen as extremely rude or something.
I don't think it's a common thing, but it's the way you felt about people when they're just like, I'm not going to lock my front doors, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you would be like,
it's more of
you
like
literally had
smooth.
You literally went on a rant of like, I would just start robbing those people. Like, if I knew they just weren't locking their doors out of spite. Like, out of spite you said that. So
yeah, it is a hubris move of like, yeah, no one's going to steal my thing. And Tally's basically like, oh, you think that the world's safe? Yeah. Guess what, motherfucker?
Yeah.
Hannah, jump on that bike and let's fucking ditch it.
Well, it has two things. One, like when she first sees Tally, they're talking. She's like, oh, my God, you look exactly the same, Hannah. And then Hannah's like, oh, that bike looks really expensive. And Tally's like, yeah.
Like, dude, I love there's that. So many moments like that where Hannah gives her a compliment and she's just like,
I mean, Jenny's like kills it in this episode. And another thing about the bike stealing, it kind of related to the Iowa stuff, I felt like, because in Iowa she kept not locking her bike up and it kept getting stolen. They kept saying you don't have to lock your bike.
Vance, what a fucking callback. I didn't even remember that.
They've been layering some stuff in here, because I never brought this up, but we brought up the teacher, her exposing herself to the teacher a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
The episode where Elijah like kisses her in the kitchen before they leave and Fran's there, while she's at the table, she's like, oh, I forgot to put on underwear. Now, this is episodes before the exposing, but it's like set up that she doesn't wear underwear when she goes to school. Like, so they've done a good job of like littering things into this.
I'm so glad that you caught on to that stuff, especially this bike one, because I completely forgot about that. That is a good fucking, you know what, fans?
Hey, I'm just saying,
kudos to you, man.
We're watching all these episodes, some of it's seeping in,
Yeah, man.
Yeah, no, but the bike thing was big because it happened a bunch in the Iowa thing. So, like, her stealing a bike now is kind of one of those metaphorical. It could be. Maybe it's just random, but maybe they just wanted a bike.
She's grabbing life by the handlebars now, Vance. Yeah.
Exactly.
She's not just letting her bike get stolen. Now she's in control.
I love the montage that happens next to them riding around, right? And I kind of love that I have no idea where they're riding to. Like, they're over the Williamsburg Bridge at one point, but I thought they were in Brooklyn already. But maybe they weren't. And maybe they were in Manhattan. But that was, no, they were in Brooklyn. It was the Brooklyn one, right? They were on North 7th. It was Crift Dogs.
I mean, they also go. Yeah, they're in the Crift Dogs. That's the Brooklyn one.
Yeah, but then they ride over Williamsburg Bridge.
Yeah.
Which would take you into Manhattan.
Yeah.
And I don't think Hannah's riding over the bridge twice. Like, going up that bridge, biking, like, I used to run that bridge and, like, I've biked over it and stuff. It's a bridge. Yeah. It's hard to bike up that hill.
I mean, it doesn't seem like this is an activity that Hannah would be down for at all. But it seems like they would have been bike riding for a good at least hour and a half.
Yeah.
They're going all over the city.
Everywhere. Yeah. And it's cool. It looks fun. And Jenny Slate has a great line where they're going down the bridge and she's like, don't look back, but I look like a poodle with his head stuck out a window, a car window. And I was like, oh, this is great. They're having fun.
Dude, it's that scene. I haven't lived in New York for almost 4 years now, but seeing that scene and like the montage of the city made me kind of nostalgic for living there. And then I snap back to reality of like how terrible it is to live there at certain points.
If you want to watch a show that's great, but will make you hate New York, it's How To with John Wilson. It's this HBO show produced by Nathan Fielder. And it's really great, but they have just B-roll of New York City being at its worst. Like, and he's not, and it's not like knocking it. It's just like they show
the reality of it.
Like, it's the anti-tourism, I would say, version of like New York. Like, everything you see, like the people in the street doing weird stuff and like weird things on the subway, and you're just like, wow.
I was talking to someone the other day because people out here and across the country have this romanticized thing about New York, and they're like, oh man, it would be so great to live there. And then once you're living there, there's so many terrible things about living there. And the example that I always give about it is when it rains there are puddles in the street that reflect the street, so you don't know that it's a puddle until you're ankle deep in it's a deep fucking puddle, and you didn't even know it. And so you have the thing of like, you're going deeper than you thought that you were going to go. Your foot is now completely soaked, and you have to be in that weather and walk to the subway and just go home with a completely soaked ankle. That's just the smallest, most inconvenient part about living in New York. And like, it wouldn't even register for a lot of people, but that shit wears on you, and it happens so much, especially when it's snowing and stuff out there, and there's all this dirty ass snow, and it's just
thing I'll say is like those puddles is that you have to step in those puddles when you first get there. That's the only way you learn. Like, that's how you can tell. Like, if you're walking down the street and you see someone do that, you're like, ah, that person's new to New York or a tourist. Like, you get it. Yeah. And like, they will never. They might do it accidentally again, but they'll never do it like as brazenly as you do it when you don't know it, because it's an optical illusion of epic proportions. Like, you see it, you're like, oh, that's the sidewalk, and you're just going deep down in it.
Dude, and I've lived in cities my entire life.
Yeah,
I've never had that optical illusion except in New York.
Yeah,
nowhere else. It's just like a very uniquely New York thing. And it's kind of like when a kid touches a stove and it's like, oh, hot. Like, you need to go through it to realize it. Yep. And then you're just paranoid about stepping into a street for the rest of your life.
Well, and I'll say this. New York has this addictive hold on you. Like, because when you're living in it, like, you can't imagine living elsewhere a lot of the times. Like, and then if you actually, like, move away and leave, I don't know if we talk about that. Like, you move away and you're like, oh, okay. There are other cities and places I can live. But when you're there, you're just like, what? A place isn't, a bodega is not going to be open at 4:30 a.m. Like, what am I going to do? It's like, you know, you could just not go. You know what I mean? Like, you're like, I can't deal with this.
I used to do a joke in my act about how living in New York is like being in an abusive relationship, because while you're there, you're like, this fucking sucks. I hate this place. And then you leave for a week and you're like, I wonder what New York's up to.
Yeah. I've never been so happy to come back from like trips at home and just go back to New York. And like, oh, I'm home. Like, you have to go for like an extended exodus for it to like wear off of you. But it's definitely, it has a hold on you. You just can't wait to get back to it. But you also can't wait to leave for like a couple days.
Yeah. Yeah, man. So after the biking montage, they go to Tally's place. And Tally's like, well, this is my spot. And Hannah's like, all right, well, it was lovely spending the day with you. And Tally's kind of like, wait, you mean we're not just going to go upstairs and smoke a big fat J? And then Hannah just throws the bike on the ground and is like, yeah, let's fucking do it.
Yeah, I was like, why would Hannah say no to this?
Yeah.
There's no reason.
So they go up into her apartment and they're smoking weed. And Hannah's basically telling her like, oh my God, I just want you to know, like, I'm so jealous of your life. And you're so amazing. And we've been out of college for 4 years and you've got 2 books and a book of poems. And Tally's like, and also this thing. And she's like, you're so amazing, and like, just your life is so great. And Tally's kind of like, yeah. And that was another one of those moments where she's like, yeah, it's pretty cool to be me, I guess. I guess a lot of people are jealous of me.
Yeah, like, she, no, that it was one of those ones where she accepted it. Like, she tried to say like, I can't believe, why would you be jealous of me? And she's like, come on. And then she's like, okay, yeah. Like, of course, if that's the thing you wanted to do, you would be jealous of me. But then Tally goes on to like talk about how like her life's not fully fulfilled for what she does. And she's so like, she's getting praise from other people, which is literally most of society these days with Instagram and like YouTubers. Like, you're just looking for that feedback. When like you get a Twitter mention, you're like, oh my God, someone mentioned me. Like, it's these little gems and like little things that keep you going, but it's not like.
Yeah, she goes on a speech about how she Googles herself every day just to see if Gawker or any other news outlet is talking about her. And she doesn't feel like she's authentically herself anymore. It's kind of like she's a caricature of herself. And it's a really empty experience because she's living her life based on, you know, what she thinks Tally would be doing versus what she actually wants to do. And that's a very fucking shallow and empty existence, and she starts crying and it seems miserable. And it's, I mean, I thought that was a very powerful and accurate and awesome scene as well.
It's one of those interesting scenes because like you have Lena Dunham playing Hannah, who is Lena Dunham is Tally, but Hannah, but she's also playing Hannah, who's the opposite, you know? Like, it's one of those things where if you look at the meta sense of it, where it's like because Tali's like, oh, you have all these experiences, Hannah, and I don't have these experiences. And then it's like, great, Hannah has all these experiences, but she's not happy because she doesn't have any of the writing success. And now you have the writing success, but now you're complaining about you don't have the experiences. So it's one of those things where I think no matter what, people will find a way to not be happy in a situation.
I think this scene also sets up nicely a way for Hannah to get back into writing, because Tally's telling her like, you have all these experiences, you've had all these boyfriends, like I have books and essays and shit, but like you've lived life, you have so much to say. And that was the spark, I feel like, to be like, well, Hannah now has a lot to say. Maybe she'll take Tally's advice to heart and get back into writing or something.
I was wondering how they were going to transition her back into writing. Yeah, I guess her just ending it, like her quitting school, I didn't see fully happening based off of,
yeah.
Like when that happened, I was like, oh, okay. I didn't see that coming from, but I think maybe the end of last episode when she was driving back to New York and she had that like optimistic view of things, it was like, you know what? I gotta change. I mean, there was a lot of things in the last episode that should have made her decide that she needs to change.
Because the guy's like, yeah, this is a great city to start over in, and this is kind of like her starting over.
And I'm
excited to go see where this goes. Maybe she will get back into writing, who knows. People that watch the whole series know, but we don't.
But this was my next moment of almost sex that didn't happen, which I was I was grateful for, and also showed that Hannah might have learned a lesson.
Yeah, dude. Because after this like powerful emotional thing of like, you have all these experiences and Tally and her kind of commiserating about, you know, the grass is always greener type of thing. They're staring at each other and Hannah just goes, should we have sex? And then Tally goes, I don't know. Should we? And then Hannah goes, probably not.
And Tally's like, yeah, that's weird. And I was like, great, because it had that moment where I was like, oh no.
Yeah, that was the big one for me. I was like, thank God they didn't go through with this.
I was like, wait, I'm like, if she does this one, like, I think we just have to have her being a lesbian the next season or whatever, right? Yeah. I was like, at this point, maybe that's what we're saying. which it's not what we got from the yoga, her hooking up with the yoga instructor. Like, yeah. So she learned her lesson there. Like those moments come where things get really close and her default is, oh, I'm going to have sex with this person or thank them by blowing them. And then she was like, huh, maybe not.
Not every nice interaction I have needs to end with me fucking somebody.
And that was like, that was just such a relief.
That was also a great way to break that trope, because I think everybody saw that kind of coming when they were staring at each other. Mm-hmm. And I was like, please don't do this. Yeah. And then she's like, you know what? No.
And the way they like laugh like, about God. It and it's just played really well. And like the whole scene is edited great. Like it's just that whole scene just works. And then it cuts to like I'll give some credit to Ray directing Alex Karofsky. Like it's directed well. Like and then they have that montage of them smoking and dancing, which is fun.
Dancing to Feeling Myself by Beyonce and Nicki Minaj. Dude, that song fucking rocks.
Yeah.
I don't really like Beyonce, but that song is a heater, bro.
Yeah. And I thought like, okay, we're just going to do like, cause they do this, like here's the montage of them smoking, getting high and just like playing around. Like it's fun, but it's not going to mean anything. Mm-hmm. And it means so much for the next scene that I was laughing out loud.
You take the lead on the next scene.
No, you can set it up. You can set it up. You can go for it.
Okay, they're both high out of their minds at this point because they've been smoking. I mean, that fucking joint was enormous. She was not lying when she was like, we should smoke a fatty J. That shit was fat and long as fuck.
Yeah.
So they're high out of their minds and they leave the apartment. They're kind of giggling. And Adam and Jessa show up in the doorway and Tally and Hannah just see them and they're just like, no fucking way. And they just start cackling and just saying, no. And Jessa and Adam are looking, I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you guys? And they just walk past them after a while and they're just left on the stairway. And that's how the episode ends. Them just doubled over on the stairway, just saying no and cackling.
Just dying. Tally, Jenny Slate, and like Hannah, Lena Dunham, they are just so high, cracking up, dying, speechless. Like laughter where you can't like make a sound laughter. Like they are dying. And just to see Adam and Jessa looking at them with like their groceries in their hands.
Yeah.
And like, just the reaction, because it's such a perfect payoff for like they've been talking about Jessa and Adam. Like Tally's like, wow, you have been talking about these people. And then like she sees Jessa. And like that's exactly how you should react to that. It's so absurd that you just ran into them. And instead of them running in and them having a talk, or like Tally like yelling at Jessa, calling her like a bitch for doing this, this is the best outcome. Just blatant laughter.
Just like, of course this would happen.
Of course. Oh my God, Tally, you live below Adam or Jessa, one of them, whoever lives in that place. And just...
Well, I think that it was... they were at Hannah's.
Were they at Hannah's? No, because, they were... Wait, you thinking they were
They were at Tally's.
Yeah.
Because they were upstairs and smoking weed.
Yeah, because the place that they're walking to would be Laird's apartment, if that was their apartment.
That's what I was thinking.
No.
Well, that's what I was thinking. That's why I would thought that they'd be walking into Laird's, because they don't know where Caroline is, and maybe they're helping out with Laird, but...
No.
That's so weird that Tally lives right above Adam and or Jessa.
Yeah. Which is, that's what made it so perfectly absurd and funny. And I mean, I'm thinking that was, that had to be her place, right? Like, because Hannah wouldn't have that weed.
I don't know why I thought. I know exactly why I thought.
Yeah.
I just explained it. But they were definitely at Tally's, because that's where Hannah dropped the bike in front of the thing. Yep. And that's the episode.
Yeah. So. I mean, that moment was just great to me, because just the look on their faces when Hannah and Tally are just laughing their asses off.
Yeah. It was so good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed this episode, especially after the sour taste that the last episode left in my mouth. Like, this was a nice reset.
Yeah. For me, this ending being funny and like them getting high and smoking, like, and not having sex with each other, it ended, which seemed like it was going to be a Debbie Downer episode, of opening with Fran just being aggressive, and then Hannah talking about, like, Hannah and Tally talking about their, like, careers and all these self-doubts and stuff. And even Elijah's stuff, which happens towards the middle, with him being having a breakup and being called aimless. Like, it's a lot of, like, heavy stuff in there. But then they kind of lightened it up on a nice... fun.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's a good, it's a solid episode.
Yeah,
not my favorite, but good.
Yeah, I mean it was a good one. It was a good directorial debut for this series for Alex Karpovsky. Ray,
yeah,
thought it was a good one. Yeah, that is the episode. Any final words of wisdom, thoughts, before we wrap it up here, Vance?
Yeah, we got the finale coming up for this season, so I guess we didn't see a ton of Jessa Adam, just because of the ending, so we'll see. And I'm curious to find out what's going on with Laird and the baby and all that stuff too, so
They did not address that from the last episode, where Caroline is kind of, you know, depressed and worried about hurting the baby and herself, and then Laird kind of taking off.
I got a question. Do you think Elijah, because he's been called out for being aimless, decides to double down on the raised coffee thing, or does he leave and try to do something else? Like, what do you think Elijah's next?
I think that he leaves, because I don't think that he sees himself as like being a partner in a coffee enterprise or something. I think that he's going to try and do something else.
Yeah, we just don't know enough about Elijah's just this like spirit that just walks around, and
he really is an aimless person. Yeah, you know. Yeah. I mean, Dill isn't wrong.
Yeah,
but perhaps we will get answers in our next episode, where we talk about the season finale for season 5, which is titled I Love You Baby. So who knows what that could mean? We'll figure it out next time. Thank you for listening, everybody. If you have any comments or questions, you can email us at boyswatchinggirlspodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Instagram, boyswatchinggirlspodcast. We need to start thinking about what could happen next after we finish this series, Vance. There's only one more season.
Yeah.
Maybe some of the listeners got some suggestions.
Yeah,
want to send in to us?
We don't know what's gonna happen. We still got a lot of weeks of this show still, but we don't know. Send us some suggestions if you have them.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. Later.
your answer. Oh my God, I was serious.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah.